The Inside Aperture podcast introduces you to the experts who use Apple's professional image management application to organize, edit, and output their pictures. Each show features tips and techniques that will help you improve the quality of your photography and bring efficiency to your workflow.
Hi, I'm Derek Storey with O'Reilly Media, and I am here with John McDermott today, a man I have gone shooting with, a man whose work I really like a lot, and someone who has been using Aperture now for a bit and has made the transition from his previous workflow to the Aperture workflow. And we're going to talk about event shooting and all sorts of stuff today. John, how you doing?
Fine, Derek. Thanks for having me in.
So let's just start out, just to give folks who don't know your work, just give them a snapshot of some of the events and the type of shooting that you've been doing over the last few years.
Well, I guess what people would call a pretty diverse photographer in the sense that I do a lot of sports photography. I do events like the FIFA World Cup. I've done every one since 1982. The Olympics, every Olympics since 1984. But I also work in a completely different field much of the time, which is corporate annual reports and communications, doing things like industrial photography, location photography, people working, portraits, environmental portraiture, and just general reportage in the editorial area. Lately, it seems like I've been doing a lot of travel photography, which I've been enjoying.
One of the cool things about your work, you know, you live in San Francisco, and you know this is your home base, although you travel a lot. But you always, every time I see you, you have a camera with you, you wander around, and some of my favorite shots of San Francisco that I've seen over the last few years have been yours.
Thank you, Derek. I can't resist taking pictures in San Francisco, and I think in that sense I was probably inspired early on by my friend Jay Mazel, who has done some of the most beautiful work on New York that exists. And I guess I just followed his example shot what I see when I look out the window, shot what I see when I walk the streets. Today, I stuck my new Canon G9 out the car window a couple of times just to take some pictures of the fog down on the Embarcadero, and actually got one or two decent pictures.
I love when Jay gets talking about this, because I was so proud, because I carry a camera all the time too. And the first thing when I was talking to Jay about this, he sort of chided me a little bit and goes, well, you're carrying a camera, but it's not out. It doesn't do any good if you don't have it out. And here I thought I was doing so well. But Jay says you have to have the camera out. And I noticed when you walked in the door today, your camera was around your neck.
Well, it's interesting. Jay and I had that same conversation. It wasn't a conversation. It was one-sided. That stuck with me. I try to always have a camera with me. And very often I find myself in situations where it's no exaggeration to say I often ask what would Jay do in this situation, and I don't always mean how would he take the picture. He's a pretty inspiring guy and has had a big influence on me.
So we have Jay on the East Coast and we have John on the West Coast. So we're covered right now. I want to talk a little bit about event photography, because you've done so many big time events where you just amass hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos during the thing. And the way I want to start out is talk a little bit about what your workflow was prior to Aperture. And then we're going to kind of, you know, fast forward to the present and compare that to your Aperture workflow. So let's go pick the Olympics or soccer or something, and let's talk about previous workflow.
Well, I'd like to take it a step even further back, in the sense that I began shooting when there was no digital. And workflow was a word or concept that didn't really exist, except maybe in some forward-thinking engineer's head. My workflow was to go to the Olympics, shoot a lot of Kodachrome or Ektachrome, and hand it off to a messenger who would take it to the lab. And then have an editor from Newsweek or Sports Illustrated or whoever my client was at the time would edit the film. And then I would see what they chose in the magazine. So workflow consisted of my shooting the pictures and handing the film off to somebody, and very often not seeing the film, not making the choice of the images. And digital changed all that. for better or worse, for better in the sense that we got control, we the photographers got control over a very, very important step in the image making process that was basically off limits to us before. For worse, in the sense that we now have control of that additional step, and we're responsible for that, and it takes an awful lot of time. It has taken an awful lot of time, and it's changed the way that we work at events like this. It's changed the experience in the sense that one of the cool things about going to the World Cup or the Olympics was being able to see people that you might only see every 2 years or every 4 years, friends from other countries that you have a friendship with, a camaraderie with, but you just don't have that many opportunities to sit down and meet face to face. And now a lot of that is gone because we're shooting events very often scheduled according to the needs of the host broadcaster, usually an American broadcaster. So if you're in Germany or Korea, the events take place at the best hour for broadcast in the United States. And it leads to some pretty strange work hours at these events. And when you finish, for example, last year in Germany at the World Cup, most of the games were in the evening, and it was not uncommon to finish shooting a match at the World Cup and walk out of the press center at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, or even later, after doing all your digital post-production. It's really become quite a burden.
Yeah, and I think it was really a burden in the earlier days of the workflow when we were just trying to piece together these different applications and just sort of figure out what's the best way to move this stuff from start to finish. And I used to have, I experienced it on the wedding end because I was shooting weddings a lot when you were shooting World Cup. And I'd have clients say, well, if I have you shoot it in digital, then it'll be less, right? Because the computer does all the work. And I go, no. If I shoot this 100% digital, which I'm fine with, it really should be more because now I have to do all this work that before I just handed off to a lab and they had a big, you know, production workflow. And so they could actually do a lot of the post-productions cheaper than it takes me, you know, than it would cost me. The difference is, of course, I think that you'll end up with better shots if you pay me to do it because I will go through them carefully and I will handcraft them probably better than a third-party lab. So you're right, it's give and take. But in the early days of workflow, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. I mean, the shoot ended up only being half of the project.
Yeah, I've gone through the same process. And I was I'm anything but an early adopter. I didn't really transition into digital until 2004. The Athens Olympics, and only then because one of my clients at that event was Canon, and they wanted me to shoot a significant portion of what I was doing on digital. And that experience convinced me that I could safely make the transition. I didn't feel like being the icebreaker for everybody to come behind. But nevertheless, I still found it complicated, time-consuming, and not a little bit daunting to find my way through this new world of digital workflow. And like you, I ended up cobbling together, after listening, seeking advice from colleagues and reading all the articles that you can find in the various magazines and online, I cobbled together a sort of workflow that worked for me. Like you, it involved several different programs, a couple of different hard drives, and not a few lost files.
Yeah, give us an example of one of your cobbled workflows, and these will be things that you know, I'm going to put in the category of I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. But you know, at the time, that's what we had. So, what were some of the things that you used?
Well, I started off with Photoshop. Go to the Finder on my desktop. Download the pictures to the desktop. Open Photoshop. When Bridge came out, I started working through Bridge, making adjustments in Photoshop that I needed, and then I'd convert images. If they were JPEGs, I might leave them as JPEGs. Was shooting RAW, which I began to do gradually and now do almost exclusively. I had to create a form of the image that would be easily usable by a client. And all of these things basically kept multiplying the size of the files in the computer and eating up more and more space. It was a little bit complicated. And then a friend of mine suggested Photo Mechanic, which I thought was a godsend at the time, because it really is a very nice, fast little program, and it achieves that by really limiting its goals in terms of what it does for you. What it does brilliantly and very quickly. But basically, after you download images, look at them, caption them, give them names, anything else you want to do, you got to go somewhere else. And then there you are again in an image editing program like Photoshop.
And then the thing about it is, you know, our computer, it only holds, you know, so many pictures. And, you know, here you are, you're a photographer on the go, you're piling up pictures, and you got to deal with this.
Yeah, it's become a real problem, because every time they improve the camera, what that ends up meaning is that they increase the size of the files you're shooting, and which means you need more storage space. And how many portable hard drives can you carry with you? And do you want a job partially stored on one hard drive and partially stored on another hard drive, which is what it was coming to? And then it becomes easy to lose track of things. And you've got different versions that are all taking up space. And it was very, very inefficient.
Yeah, and these different versions, you know, obviously are a lot of times full-size versions, which take up even more space. So now let's fast forward to about August this year, when you really started to kind of put your Aputure workflow together. And tell me a little bit about the changes that came about around that.
I'd been looking at Aputure since the time of the Winter Olympics in Torino, when Apple had some people over there that were collaborating with Kodak in the press center. And I was actually shooting the Olympics for Kodak. They gave me kind of an introduction to Aputure, and I was interested in it. But as I said before, I'm not an early adopter, and it took me a while. I did my own research and came to the conclusion that this was something that I really needed to look into. But I didn't really kind of get my wings with Aputure until I got until I upgraded my computer, and I got a MacBook Pro. A 17-inch MacBook Pro with the latest Intel processors. Because frankly, on my older machine, Aputure was just a little too slow. It just wasn't efficient enough for the machine that I had. But now, there's no problem. I love it. What it's done, it's basically brought everything under one roof for me, except for very occasional things that I might not need to do in Photoshop. I'm not a photographer who's doing composites of multiple images. I'm not doing a lot of manipulation. I'm pretty much an observer, a reporter who wants things to look pretty much as I saw them. After decades of shooting mostly transparency film, I've gotten pretty good, pretty fastidious about making sure I get it right when I press the button as much as I can. I'm not somebody who is overly dependent upon the ability to fix it in post-production. It's not something I want to have to do very often. Not to say I'm immune. It does happen sometimes, and when it does, I'm really grateful, particularly for the ability to work in RAW. Basically, Aputure has given me a really elegant solution, and a simple one. It may not seem that way to people who look at it at first, but a simple, elegant solution, as you would expect from a company like Apple, to download, edit, caption, and correct your images. It's basically a one size fits all post production tool. It's very, very elegant, and it has the bonus of having been designed by Apple. It looks like it actually belongs on the computer.
I think Aputure is particularly good for guys like us, in the sense, and I'm not saying I'm the same kind of shooter as you, but I am, in the sense that capture is super important to me. And I've never been a guy that shot an image and said, okay, now I'm gonna work on that 2 hours later in Photoshop. I always said, well, what can I do to get the most information right now so that I can process it quickly? And I think for anyone, and I've seen you walk around with a handheld light meter, so I know I know you're really into getting it right on capture. The thing that I wish I could have done in the old days of transparency, I wish I would have had those highlight and shadow recovery sliders in those days, because that's the one thing that I just absolutely love in Aperture, and I love it in Adobe Camera Raw too. You know, and that, to me, that is part of capture. I know that when I take a picture now, that I will be able to hold a lot of those highlights and a lot of that shadow detail, even if it doesn't even show up immediately on my LCD. I kind of know where the edges are and that I'm going to be able to recover that. And I think that, you know, that along with all the other beauties of having everything integrated in Aperture, this makes us a very nice world, because I know what the application can do. I can shoot that way, and I stay in Aperture about 95% of the time. 5% maybe have to go to Photoshop.
Yeah, your experience very much mirrors my own. I couldn't agree more about the tools that you referred to, the highlight and shadow sliders, which have, to somebody who for years was working basically with a Kodachrome mindset, it's opened up a whole new world of possibilities in terms of what I can get in an image. What can be visible? I can communicate more what's in the shadows now than I ever could with transparency film. I can be a little bit more flexible about how I shoot, because I know if something's maybe pushing the edge, either on the dark or the light side, that I'm probably going to be able to bring it in my final version of the shot. When I get into Aperture, and it's not what I would call cheating, it's there, and it's just that with the recording media that we were accustomed to using for so long, those media were really limited in terms of what they could see, and our eyes can see a lot more. And Aperture, basically digital, using Aperture gives us the ability to render that what we see in a more accurate fashion.
Yeah, I don't think it's cheating either, because it's there. We know it's there, and that's the difference. And anymore, we know about how much is there, so we know about how much we can recover when we shoot. And I just think that that's made me a better craftsman. You know, along those lines, I want to ask you about something else. And this is a question I get a lot when I teach about white balance. Now, you're the guy that introduced me to ExpoDisc. And ever since you introduced me to it, I've been a faithful user. And I shoot it with custom white balance most of the time, unless I'm in something that I know, you know, like middle day, where I know the camera can handle it. But a lot of people say, well, you know, since you can make these corrections with raw files with no penalty, why bother to use custom white balance when you're shooting raw? But you and I both do. And I'd be curious to hear, you know, your reason why you still use ExpoDisc and custom white balance, even though, you know, we both know in RAW you can make the adjustment later.
I think for me, it's above all else, it's a philosophy of working, how I want to work. I want to do it right. I want to be accurate. I want to be correct. I want to have the best starting point to begin my post-production. You might say it's not a big deal. You know, you get the image on the screen, you pick a neutral value and do an eyedropper and get a white balance, or just work the sliders until it looks the way you want. But why not get it right and minimize the amount of time you have to spend doing that? Even when I'm using an ExpoDisc and using custom white balance, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to come out exactly the way I want it to look. But I find it much better to at least have that as my starting point to get where it is I really want to be. It's just a style of or a philosophy of working to me more than anything else. I want to do things in the best possible way that I can, so that I don't have to do a lot of makeup work later.
One of my most favorite feelings in photography is when I'm on assignment and I have to turn a shot around quickly. So I shoot, and I try to capture the best I can. I upload into Aperture. I do my photo edit, which is find the shot that, you know, or the shots that I want to do. And then I look at them and say, okay, what do I need to do before I, you know, export this and send it to the client? My most favorite moment is when I look at it and I go, I don't have to do anything to it. I just have to export it and send it to the client. I love that moment.
I don't want to say that it happens to me all that often, but it does happen, and it's a glorious feeling to know that you feel like, you know, I'm I've done my job. Yeah. I did this as well as I could because I did it the right way, and it's ready to go. You know, it's something that guys like you and I I think take pride in.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I hate to sound like old fogey, old school guy. I am an old school guy, but I see a lot of younger photographers that just seem to assume that it's okay to fix everything later, and I just think that's just sloppy. And indicates, I think it says something about their general attitude towards photography that isn't necessarily good.
So do you think with these tools now and then also with our cameras getting better, are we starting to kind of come back full circle to maybe where our post-production won't be that time-consuming nightmare that we've kind of endured in the early years of digital here?
I think you're absolutely right. I see that happening. The amount of time that I spend now in post-production on big shoots where I've got thousands of images that I might have done over the course of a week or 2 weeks that I've got to render down to a selection that I submit to a client and has to be in a usable form. With aperture, it's just become a lot simpler, especially the output. There was a time when I took liberal advantage of my camera's ability to shoot RAW plus JPEG. There's no reason to shoot JPEG anymore in aperture. You shoot an image, you capture the raw data, and if you want a JPEG, you basically output it immediately. You don't need to take up all that space on your compact flash cards and on your hard drives. I see that maybe we'll never quite get back to the point where I hand a roll of film off to somebody and I don't do anything again. But I don't want it to be like that because I've gotten accustomed to having that little extra step of control where I can limit what they see. I can show them what I really want them to see. To quote our friend Jay again, he once said to me when I was complaining about a client who had used the quote wrong picture, unquote. And he said, "Who gave it to them?" Which, you know, the answer was the photographer. I did. And he said, "Well, you know, why'd you give it to them?" "Well, because I thought I had to. They wanted to see everything." He said, "They don't have the right to see everything. They only need to see what you want them to see." And with digital, with aperture, it's easier to do that. And it's easier to do it really, really well.
So now, next Olympics, you might get to hang out with a few of your friends again.
Well, we'll see. I'm in the middle of discussing that now with a couple of possible clients, and it will be my first Aperture Olympics, which I'm looking forward to.
So, one thing, John, before we go, I wanted to ask you. So if folks want to see more of your shots or find out more about your work, where's the best place for them to go?
That's easy. I have a website that it's actually currently under renovation, but it's still visible. It's www.mcdfoto.com. And I also have a small portfolio on the PhotoServe site, www.photoserve.com, which is the Photo District News portfolio site. And that's actually at the moment a little bit more current and something that's because it's easier to kind of update it than the other site. But either of those two places, and I'd be happy if people come and take a look.
I highly encourage it. And again, thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Derek.
The Inside Aperture podcast is produced by O'Reilly Media. To learn more about Aperture, be sure to visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture for articles, tutorials, blogs, and podcasts. This show is produced on a Mac using Soundtrack Pro. See you next time.